I'm Risa Williams, and this is the Motivation Mindset, where I talk to successful people about how they manage their time. I'm a therapist and productivity coach and the author of 3 self-help books, including The Ultimate Time Management Toolkit and my newest book, The Ultimate Self-Esteem Toolkit, 25 Tools to Boost Confidence, Achieve Goals, and Find Happiness, which is in stores worldwide now. Joining me on the show today is writer and PR strategist Shigofasu Endabane, who is here to talk to me about the subject of burnout, how to recognize signs of burnout, and what to do when you're recovering from it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show today. Before we start, I wanted to give a special shout out to everyone listening around the world. This month alone, we've charted in the top 100 in the US, the UK, Norway, Greece, France, Slovakia, Costa Rica, and South Africa. And joining me today is a special guest from Johannesburg. Her name is Shigofasu Endabane, and she's here to talk about burnout. So welcome, Shigofasu, to the show.
Thank you so much, Risa. I'm really happy to be here, and I'm looking forward to having this conversation with you.
You know, in America, we have this hustle culture of nonstop productivity. Mm-hmm. So how are things over there in terms of, is it similar to here that people are working themselves into states of burnout all the time? Or what's your
opinion? Oh, without a doubt, hustle culture is just as big over here. Everybody, there's a, you know, team no sleep. So people glorifying not getting any sleep and literally working all hours of the day, all hours of the night. So it's pretty similar in that regard. And we also don't really hear much of people taking breaks. Sabbaticals is not something that I was familiar with until I had to take a break on my own.
Right.
It's not really encouraged. It's just you keep working and you never stop.
That's the problem here as well, is like, even if you try to take a break, it's sort of frowned upon, or people just feel it generally that they can't take a lunch break. There's too much peer pressure to just keep working. And people are checking their phones all night long about work as well.
I think that's the really sad thing. Even as you're saying, people are working during their lunch break. It's like, even when there are designated times to take a break and rest, those are not really encouraged. And there's almost like a glorification of the fact that even when there is time allocated to rest, you are still working through that and working yourself to the bone.
Yeah.
So I think it's quite unfortunate that we live in a culture where nobody takes a break. And I suppose I wonder sometimes about other issues that come into play, like being a woman and the guilt that comes with not being busy all of the time and having to, like, it's like, even if you do take a break, the whole time that break could be quite preoccupied with feeling guilty about taking a break, as opposed to just fully leaning into it. So it is quite difficult in that regard.
Yeah, there is an element as a woman that you're always supposed to be doing things. I know as a mom too, there's always this pressure that even when you get a break, you have to do things for your kids, or you do things for the family, or run errands, or so you never kind of really stop and reset yourself. So talk to me a little bit about all the things you do. You're a busy person. You're writing a lot, and you've just gotten through your clinical hours on your way to becoming a therapist.
So I write for publications. That's health and wellness writing mostly, and a little bit of food writing as well. That's for a specific company called Static Media. It's actually over in the States. So I do a lot of food writing for them, which is fantastic. I'm also a podcast publicist for mental health professionals. So I work with them and consult with them in terms of pitching themselves to podcasts. But there's also clients that I pitch to podcasts myself. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I'm currently completing my master's dissertation in clinical psychology. So that's been quite the process. But the hard part really was the clinical training, being in the room, all those hours, all the clients.
It's a lot of hours.
We range
about how many hours that is.
So you
that you felt burnt out. That's when you experienced burnout. So talk to us a little bit about what that feels like when you reach a level of burnout.
And so when I got into my internship, I was feeling more and more drained, but I just assumed that it was just a manifestation of the depression. So I kept on pushing myself. It was just like, if I couldn't get up in the morning, I was like, oh, this is just, you know, it's depression. That's how it works. It's what it does. Right. I just have to get through it, keep going to therapy, keep taking my medication, all of that. So it took quite a while for me to realize that actually I was burnt out, but I was also depressed at the same time. But slowly over time, I realized that, you know, as I was having chats with my therapist, I realized that my symptoms actually were not so much depression symptoms anymore, because it wasn't just about me feeling sad and hopeless and struggling to wake up in the morning or having issues with my appetite and that sort of thing. I was now feeling quite demotivated at work. I remember having conversations with her around the ethics of my demotivation. I wasn't feeling up to seeing some of my clients. There were times when I wondered, and it was quite terrifying in that regard, I wondered what my capacity really was to give them the quality of care that they deserved. So there was something about being in this field that I had absolutely loved and I had worked so hard to be in. And it's not like there weren't challenges before. There were challenges all through the process from undergrad. And every time it was like, even though there were challenges, I was still able to work through those and hold my love and my appreciation for the work that I was doing in terms of the field.
Yeah.
But when I was doing my internship, that was completely gone. And so I think at that point, I thought, there's definitely something wrong here. This is not just a normal depressive episode.
Yeah.
I'm struggling to actually show up in a way that I used to be able to and wanted to. The desire was no longer there. And so work was starting every day. Like, even when I would get cases that I thought were really fascinating and really interesting, it was just this complete separation between what I knew would excite me and what I would find interesting and want to do, and just not having that desire or motivation at all. So I think that it was at that point that my therapist and I were just like, okay, there might be a little bit more going on here. And sure enough, even after I completed the internship, my depression got to a point where it was completely in remission. I was not on any medication anymore, but I was just so exhausted, and I had to call it. I knew that I had to take a pause. I was just like, if I keep on going, at some point I might break. And it's not in a field where you're working with people, it's not going to be great for the people that I'll be working with. So that's really where the consideration around the ethics of practicing while I was in that state came in. And I had to just give everything a pause and sit with it, which was really difficult. It was devastating. I had been working for so long. There's so many years of training.
Trying to rack up all those hours too, it's really hard to step away, because you're sort of on this hamster wheel of like, I got to get through all the hours. I got to get through all the hours. But I like what you're saying, that you needed to tease out what you were feeling, because burnout kind of sneaks up on us sometimes. And it often feels like that level of exhaustion, and you lose passion and the connection with what you're doing. And you're sort of, a lot of people will say in helping professions that their empathy, they kind of have, they're struggling to feel empathy, and they're grateful when people cancel and all these things that seem very strange to them, because they wanted to go into the business to help people. Right. So that's sometimes a warning sign when you feel that disconnection of, I don't know why I'm doing this job anymore, right? And you just need to step back sometimes to reconnect with what that is, what the intention was originally to do it. Yeah. Often it's just the exhaustion, and that's just what mental and physical exhaustion to that degree feels like, which a lot of us are unaware of what that actually feels like. You know, we don't label it as it's happening.
And I think I love what you're saying about tapping into the empathy and checking in on the empathy, because that was definitely a thing for me. I felt like I was losing my empathy, you know, and I was just like, this is wild.
It's not normal, right?
Because why do I feel like I don't care?
Yeah.
You know, so that was definitely a big red flag in terms of where I was at. And I think the thing is, we don't talk enough about burnout, especially, I mean, I was in my late 20s when I experienced burnout. So I was actually going and looking for information about burnout and other clinicians who'd had experiences of burnout or other students who had experiences of burnout. And I wasn't finding any. It seemed like this thing that only happens to people of a certain age, and not so much younger people. So that was also the big thing that I was grappling with. I was kind of gaslighting myself and asking myself, if it's really real, like, am I actually burnt out? Why is nobody else experiencing this? Why is nobody else talking about it? So there's also like a deep sense of isolation that comes with it. And it was just like, how has everybody else been able to just keep going? And yet here I am, unable to move and unable to do any of this anymore.
Yeah. And I think what you're talking about is so common. I work with so many clients of all different ages, all different levels in their careers, having burnout, having very kind of intense feelings of burnout. And I think there is a little bit of a societal stigma against talking about it, because like we said, we have these hustle cultures where everybody is encouraged to work nonstop. So it's almost going against the grain to step outside of that, say, hey, burnout is a problem. There is this judgment maybe people feel admitting that, especially when you're younger and expected to hustle the most. There is that judgment maybe you internally feel like, can I admit that I'm already burnt out?
Yes.
We need to normalize that a little bit more as a way of being kinder to ourselves and understanding that the people around us are all probably facing that to some degree. They're just not expressing it.
Yeah. And to make, and I mean, I think that besides making, taking breaks and pauses, okay, there's also something about just, because I know I experienced quite a deep sense of failure. So it was also like, I think about hustle culture and how often it works. It's often connected to overachieving as well. So there can be a little bit of that complex where it's like you've been overachieving your whole life and suddenly, you know, burnout comes along. It's kind of like, there's a thing around, I mean, I had a bit of an identity crisis almost. Where I was just kind of like, I've been able to just get through things and keep it moving and do well, actually. And now suddenly it's just, it's not,
it's almost like, it's who not am I anymore when I'm not achieving? And so many people feel that they know who they are when they're achieving things and checking boxes off and moving forward with these little goals. But when they stop doing it, it's almost like they need to go into that acceptance of themselves as being the same person who does things, but it's okay to rest too. And I think that's where a lot of us get stuck, right? Like, we don't know who we are when we're resting and when we're not accomplishing anything anymore.
And I think, I mean, it's definitely a byproduct of hustle culture. Like, the whole culture itself is driven on achievement. You've got to constantly be producing something tangible. But there is, I agree with you, there's just so much value in just asking ourselves who we are apart from the work that we're doing every day. Because I do think that that aids, like, figuring that out and coming to a place of self-acceptance and really authentic, really deep self-acceptance. It's like, regardless of what my hands are doing by way of my work, I can still see myself as worthy and deserving of certain things. But I think that's something that we have to be intentional about. It doesn't just happen.
When
everything around us speaks to the tangible achievements and things that we can rack up.
And a lot of times we rationally know these things, but we still have these unstated beliefs deep inside of ourselves that we are not worthy of praise or love if we're not achieving things. And a lot of this is reinforced by social media and stuff around us that, like, you need to keep generating output to get any kind of emotional input. And that's not true at all, right? It's like a core belief that needs to be examined. And sometimes most of us don't examine these beliefs until we actually stop, or until we burn out, or until we're so exhausted that finally we let that stuff come to the surface and we look at it. And it could be so helpful to do. So talk to us a little bit about how you got out of burnout.
I think the biggest thing was I really expected myself to snap out of it really quickly. But I got to a point where I realized that actually this is not going to go away unless I completely surrender to it. Rather than trying constantly to just make myself or convince myself to stop being exhausted. Like, I just thought, okay, this is where I'm at. I've taken the practical steps I've needed to take the pause. So I remember submitting my leave of absence, my medical leave of absence forms, and be like, well, that's done. Like, once it's approved, there's like, I literally cannot continue. And so that had created so much space for me to just start to figure out, because I realized that there were so many self-care practices that I had just let go of along the way. Like when I was under pressure, I would stop doing things that would be nurturing to me. So I remember just kind of being intentional and starting to like ask my inner child. Actually, I was like, I wonder what my inner child would want to do. Like, how did I play when I was a child? What are the things I enjoyed when I was a child? So I kind of got back to those things. So I started journaling, reassociating on the pages and writing whatever comes to mind. I started taking walks every morning. I loved baking when I was a child, so I started baking again. I started meditating. So I really just created a really nurturing morning routine. I've always been a morning person. I wake up early whether I want to or not. Yeah. So I thought, let me use this time to start the day by nurturing myself. And through that, I remembered slowly that I did really enjoy writing as a child. And so I figured maybe I could find a way to work with this and not just keep my words in my journal. And so I found myself a mentor and I started meeting up with her. And soon enough, I was writing for various publications, writing a little bit about my own personal experiences. And I think that's where I really started to find my healing. And in addition to having these really nurturing practices, I was also establishing this little creative career for myself on the side I had no pressure at the time. I was like, I was not trying to make money or make a career out of it. I was just like, let me just give it a shot and see where it goes.
Yeah. And often that's how we spark the fun again, too, when we take the pressure off. Because part of the burnout is there's too much pressure. There's too much responsibility. Yes. So in a way, you healed yourself by taking the pressure off and trying to find what feels fun to me right now. What inspires me? Yeah. How do I connect with that passion again? And I like what you're saying with using words like a nurturing routine. I love that word that you invented, because I always go back to how kind can we be to ourselves in these situations. Mm. When we're burnt out, we need a lot of kindness, self-kindness. We need a lot of self-compassion. We're losing empathy, we need to be empathetic to ourselves. So using words like, I have a nurturing routine, it pulls us out of that hustle culture where it's like, I need to do a morning routine, right? Like, because that's going back into that harsh life.
So I can be more productive.
So I can get back on the hamster wheel. And our brain is like, no, I'm done with that. I will not sign up for that. But if you call it a nurturing routine, your brain is like, oh yes, finally, you're understanding what I need. So that's great. Give it a label like that, because that's what I hear from clients. Sometimes they'll go right into the harsh wording of, okay, you're going to go to the gym and you're going to do this and you're going to meditate. And it almost sounds like we're making more work, like the recovery from burnout turns into work again.
And it's just more exhausting. And if you can't get the stuff done, you feel so much worse. It's like, I have to get to the gym. But on that one day when you don't manage to get to the
gym, you're exhausted.
It's like a massive failure.
It's almost like we've created a second job for ourselves. And the second job is recovering from burnout job.
it's not going to work.
It's not going to work. You're going to get burnt out from this recovering.
That's the thing with burnout as well, right? It lends itself to a lot of destructive coping mechanisms, actually. Because I think that was the big thing. It wasn't just that I had let go of self-care practices, but I'd also turned to destructive coping mechanisms. So when I started to like do all these other things that were nurturing, I didn't, you know, it was taking over that space for destructive coping mechanisms. I was like, okay, this actually makes me feel good. You know, and I feel proud of myself after doing this, and I can see, like, see the products on my hands, and it's exciting and that sort of thing. So I think that kind of became, in a way, it was a really helpful way of just finding and actively creating better coping mechanisms that I still use to this day. I haven't stopped baking and I haven't stopped walking.
That's wonderful.
Journaling in the mornings. So.
Yeah. If it's working, keep doing it, right?
So I think that's one of the greatest gifts that me burning out gave me, actually, is now that I burnt myself into the ground and had to just fully surrender to not being okay and not being perfect, I feel like it just makes me so much better at showing up in a more authentic way.
It is that jarring you into perspective. It gives you a sudden perspective you didn't have before.
Definitely. And I always say, every time I have a conversation with someone about burning out, I always say to them that I don't think that there was anything that would have made me stop except for burnout. Yeah. I don't imagine that I would have come to a point by myself and said, actually, let me take a break and gain some perspective. So as jarring, as jarring as it was, it made me pay attention. And I had to actually sit and look around me and make really, really vital and really crucial decisions about where I wanted to go after the burnout. So that's been a big thing. And I'll always, always, always appreciate that it kind of just jarred me into submission a little bit. Because I really don't imagine.
Because we would just continue down the same path until our brains realize, no, this isn't working. As someone who's experienced burnout as well, I could say it definitely gave me that sudden perspective. Like, I cannot continue down this path. My brain and body aren't signing up for it anymore. They're actually shutting down. So I need to learn new ways to approach things. And I need to become more aware of what my body's doing, in it. What is the different level of stress I'm feeling each day, and become a little more sensitive to that. And in a way, it all goes back to the kindness we were talking about. It's a way of being compassionate to your body and noticing, wow, I'm having a hard time dealing with this, or this is a lot on my brain right now. I need to slow it down and be really nurturing and kind. And I like that you had one tool where you reach out to people and you say, hey, I could use some motivation right now or something. Can you explain that tool a little bit?
Yeah. So I call them affirmation requests.
I like that.
I know that I like to do my own little affirmations. I know I like to do when I'm really struggling with perfectionism, or I'm trying to do a task that I'm a little bit nervous about. That's when the perfectionism rears its head a little bit more. So what I used to do was write little affirmations for myself on the side of my computer or my desk, and I'd read those over and over as I'm doing the task. But over time, I kind of realized, like, actually, like, this is all happening in my own head, and I'm sitting here and I'm doing this by myself.
Right.
So the one day, I actually sent a text to my friend, and I was like, I just need you to tell me that you're proud of me and that you think I'm amazing. I could really use that right now.
Nice.
And she sent me a paragraph of like how proud of me she was and how she's seen me, do like really brave things and do amazing, and like even listed a few like stuff that she had witnessed me do. And I remember just kind of seeing that and realizing that actually there is so much, it's so easy to say I've got community and to say I've got support, and then still expect that people will know when to show up to give that support. But when I made that request, I realized that actually I can just reach out, and I can give my people a bit of a manual on how I need them
a little cue, like
a little cue in the moment.
I need a little
like,
boost this is what today. I like that, and it's specific. It's like, please tell me these things, because we can't trust people to pick up on the cues. Everyone is lost in their own head, and they don't know.
Yeah.
Sometimes we look very calm on the outside. They don't know when we need that little boost. I like that you were brave and you put yourself out there and said, "Hey, here's what I need to help me out." And like you said, you got it right back. You got it right back at you.
Yeah, definitely. Because it's also like when people are supporting us through something, I mean, we often hear, let me know what I can do is a thing that a lot of people will say, or let me know how I can help. And it's just sometimes we may not know ourselves. And sometimes when people do say, let me know how I can help, they also saying so, asking that because they're stumped in terms
they don't
of what
know.
It is
yeah.
that they can do. So I found being really specific about what my needs are at any particular moment is always really helpful. And it feels good for both people because I feel affirmed, but my community also feels like they've shown up in a way that's actually helpful and are able to request the same from me. So sometimes I'll get requests for meals. A friend will say, I actually don't have any, like I have no capacity to cook for myself this week. Can you just send me a meal or cook something for me? Because they know I like to do that. And that's what I will do in return. So we have different care languages, I suppose, but it helps to be specific with you all kind of show up in a way that is most helpful as opposed to trying to guess and figure out how to support someone.
I like that. So take the guessing game out of it all. When it comes to any people in our lives, just take the guessing game out and get more effective about communicating our needs and specifically what can the person do in that moment that's an actionable strategy to make you have a better experience or give you a little boost. So that's a wonderful tool. So thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciated all your insight and all your stories that can inspire and help people out there who are struggling with burnout and recovering from it.
Thank you so much, Risa. This has been such a lovely conversation. I really enjoyed connecting with you.
Thanks again, and I'd love to have you back on the show someday. Have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, I will. You too.
If you're enjoying the tools discussed on this episode, please visit theultimatetoolkitbooks.com and pick up a copy of The Ultimate Self-Esteem Toolkit and The Ultimate Time Management Toolkit, both of which are in stores worldwide now. And now for an affirmation request from me to you. If you're enjoying the show, please consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. And also consider donating a cup of coffee to the show. Even a $1 donation helps us keep it going. I'm Risa Williams, and we're out of time. Thanks for listening.